This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey you, yeah you, on the job site. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ plus community, just like you? So you may not be aware, times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. So tell your workmates, your next door neighbour, and even your mum to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
We're just going to be getting hold of Warren Ench in a moment. Warren wrote a piece in The Age this week. It's called an op-ed. He is the federal member for the Queensland seat of Leichhardt. He is the Morrison government's special envoy for the Great Barrier Reef. He is a member of the Liberal National Party of Queensland, and he sits with the Liberal Party in federal parliament.
His seat actually takes in part of the Great Barrier Reef.
It does. It does. And he actually finished off his op-ed with this. The question that Barnaby Joyce and the Nationals need to answer is, when the chips are down, who do they actually support and listen to? Their farming constituencies or mining and gas executives? Interesting.
It certainly will generate a bit of debate, Macca.
Yes. Yes, you are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. We're just trying to get hold of Warren. We're just going to ring his office number in Queensland to see if we can
track him down. Now, Macca, you read this opinion piece of our Warren's. What did he actually say? Give us a high-level summary.
Look, I wasn't surprised by what Warren had written. Warren was a very early advocate in the Liberal Party room for marriage equality. And, when it wasn't all that popular in his party, and he's often taken quite a different view on a lot of these issues.
What was the point of his op-ed?
Look, I think he wanted to say that I don't think, and this is what we'd like to ask him, do you think Barnaby, being the leader of the National Party, sends the right signals? But what he's talking about here is he's talking about climate change and the impact on agriculture and the impact on rural and regional communities. And, it's a refreshing view because he obviously believes this. And if you look at Warren's history, he's spoken out on a lot of issues. It does take courage. Okay, he's a backbencher, but it does take courage in a political party to speak out against the orthodoxy.
Of course.
Against what the policy is. Now,
and for most MPs, it actually means the death knell too, doesn't it, Mike?
Yeah. Now, of course, he has a seat that he has won, and I don't think this is gilding the lily, he has won this on the basis of his personal support in the electorate. He actually had a break, and I'm not I don't think he lost. I think he didn't stand again. He then came back to the seat an election later and won it back. He does that. Local members that have a very big personal following, and that doesn't mean it has to be a rural seat or a regional seat. It can also be a suburban seat. You look at, there are some Labor state members in Victoria that would have a very big personal following, and, a few Liberals as well. And, Barnaby Joyce in his seat of New England, he got a very large swing. That personal following should not be underestimated.
I think you're right. Macquarie's seat is quite interesting because it does include part of the Great Barrier Reef. And, of course, he's also the special envoy for the Great Barrier Reef.
Mm.
I wonder what he thought about the UNESCO's draft recommendation about the Great Barrier Reef that was announced during the course of the week.
Well, I'd love to ask him.
I'd love to ask him as well. Yeah. But it is very interesting. I thought the government's response was pretty interesting because Susan Lake came out pretty harshly saying that they were blindsided by this, that they had, you know, this had happened without them being fully involved and consulted. I'm not sure if you watched the media coverage on the issue, Macca, but clearly what was happening was that the UNESCO was saying, well, we've been sort of deliberating this now for a period of 10 years. Mm. Yes, there's lots of good work that's being done, but the Great Barrier Reef is actually in danger.
And it has been for decades. Now, don't forget, the federal government, in fact, the previous federal government under Malcolm Turnbull, funded an organisation or a group to support, you know,
quite handsomely as well.
It was over $500 million. No tender. It's all right. There's nothing to see there. $500 million. You know, to work on the restoration and the protection of the Great Barrier Reef. So yeah, it would be interesting. Can I just say one thing about Malcolm Turnbull? I've just finished his book, which I think is called A Bigger Picture.
Mm-hmm. Any good?
Well, you know what the saddest thing is, Tess?
That you actually like the person?
I really wish...
That's not a sad thing.
...that the person that book is about and the recollections that they give to me as a reader and the examples they give, what a really, really sad thing that person was not actually the Prime Minister we got. Because if we did, he'd still be there. And the thing is,
well,
it's a beautifully written book, well, but you know what? It is almost all of it is bullshit.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's...
You think it lacked authenticity?
No, it's bullshit. It doesn't lack authenticity. It's wrong. It's not true. It's gilding the lily. It's PR. It's nonsense.
Mm.
I'm not encouraging you to buy the book. Anyone wants to borrow it, I'll lend them to them. Last thing Malcolm needs is more money.
I think we've got our guest back on.
I think we have.
But I'm not quite sure what we need to do with the new technology to get him back on.
We're going
to
work it
out. What do we need to do?
We're just going to... We've got Warren on the phone. We're just going to... So bear with us. Da-da-da-da-da. We need some hold music. Elevator music. How about you sing again, Tess?
No, I'm not doing that. But happy birthday again.
Okay, Mac, we're going to try this.
Okay.
Okay.
Hey, Warren, can you hear us?
I can hear you very, very clearly.
Fantastic. You might have missed that. I'm not going to ask you about it, but I just finished Malcolm Turnbull's book.
You wouldn't believe this, Warren, but we have the latest and best technology, and what Paul's doing is holding his mobile phone against the microphone.
Yeah, but that's all right.
It works.
You're kidding.
No. Look, I read, Warren, your op-ed this week, the National Party's elegy to net zero, by a worried Liberal. And, look, as you know, your interest in the Great Barrier Reef is long-standing and genuine. You're the special envoy. Were you taken aback? Were you surprised by what UNESCO had said?
Well, totally. And what's interesting, I mean, everybody says, oh, well, those that are coming out and being critical of both myself and the minister for saying that. But, I mean, I spoke to the agencies like the Australian Marine Institute, the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority. They had been talking to UNESCO officials right up until the announcement, and everything that they'd been told them there was, you know, I mean, of course there are challenges there, but everything that they were told them was telling them that the status would remain and, you know, it would be complementary of the work that's being done and acknowledging that, you know, we have to continue that work. Nobody realised that they were changing the category of it.
Mm.
And in fact, when the Foreign Affairs Minister and the Environment Minister, Susan Ley, rang the Secretary General UNESCO the night before, they were absolutely gobsmacked. Now, and of course, you know what I'm saying to them is UNESCO, if it wants to maintain its credibility, we know it can be very political, and it's hard not to be in you know in this current world. But if they set criteria on how they make assessments. Part of that criteria is that they talk to the managing authorities. Now, you know, and this is a point I keep putting on in relation to my stand on climate change. You know, I asked the question, and I'll ask the question of you guys. We are in the top 10 in relation to the management of COVID in the world. There's no question about that. I mean, there's always challenges, but we are right up there in the top 10. What is it that we've done that puts us in that top 10? I ask you the question.
One of you guys,
give me an answer.
We listen to the science.
You're one of two that has actually answered the question right. In fact, it goes a little bit further. We listen to the mainstream science.
Yes.
We don't listen to the, you know, to the crazies on either side, or the extreme arguments on either side, either the alarming or there's nothing here to see. We listen to the mainstream science. And so if we're able to apply that and be so successful in dealing with a global health, pandemic, a crisis, why on earth wouldn't we apply exactly the same principles to dealing with a global environmental crisis?
Correct.
And so, you know, we've got not within AIMS and CSIRO, we have got not some of the best. We have acknowledged the best reef scientists in the world. Fact. So, you know, you always get some on the fringe in the science that say everything's going to everything's going to die tomorrow. Give us some more money and we'll help fix it. And you get on the other side, there's nothing, as usual, nothing to see here. But listen to the mainstream guys. And, you know, if they'd have picked up the phone and spoken to the Australian Marine Institute, as they should have. Now, the Institute was established to do long-term monitoring of the reef. That is the purpose of the Marine Institute. And they have done a fabulous job. They are due to put out their latest report. It's expected out about August. But if UNESCO had ring them up and asked them how things were going, they would have told them in their next report there is going to be significant improvements across a broad section of the reef. Not that there's not challenges, but there are significant improvements. But they didn't have the courtesy of doing that. They just, you know, they did this, and this is what makes it political. It's interesting. Immediately after, you had Canada, the UK, a whole lot of European countries, Japan, all coming out and critical of UNESCO in the way in which they handled it. And I just hope that they listen to this criticism and not just try and dig down and talk to the scientists. Come and put their heads in the water, under the water. Have a look at what we got here. Of course, there's major challenges. And, you know, the biggest challenge is climate change. But it's not only in Australia. It's all in the Northern Hemisphere, because this is where the warmer water, the currents come from the Northern Hemisphere. They come down on the western side of the Americas, about Chile. They then go and they turn right, head west towards, and wherever they hit on the eastern seaboard, where there's reef, that's where bleaching occurs. So we've got to make sure that the message goes out to the China and the, you know, India and all these other countries and America to say, you guys need to help us if we want to save not only this reef, but the other 26 reefs that we have. You've got to help us. Now, this is where my argument then comes in about listening to the science. It's all very well to say what we do is not going to make any difference to it and to the actual health of the reef, because there is some basis of fact in that. I mean, we're not going to stop the hot currents coming from the Northern Hemisphere. However, if we don't do the best that we possibly can and we don't lead by example and show best practices we're able to do in so many other ways, how are we going to credibly have a seat at the table to talking those that need to be convinced that they have to change their ways?
Now,
so that's the argument.
No, look, I'm glad. What I'm going to say, Warren, is we're actually almost out of time. Fiona, our producer, will be in touch with you. I'd like you back on in the next week or so, and I'll tell you next week or the week after. I tell you the subject, and thank you for the clarification on that. Really appreciate it. The subject I'd like to ask you about next time, as a long-time supporter of our community and a long-time supporter of equality, the religious freedoms legislation.
I thought you was going to ask me about that this time.
Well, you know, I think I'm God's work. People can choose their religion, right? They can't choose their sexuality. So why would you want to legislate to make one a little bit discriminated against, but the other to have primacy?
I have a stronger view than that.
Yep.
I don't see it as a religious discrimination bill. I see it more as a Christian bill of rights.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what they're trying to do, and I mean this is the... Because I think there are a whole lot of elements that already exist that apply equally to Christianity as they do to any other principle in relation to discrimination.
But don't we really need a Bill of Human Rights?
When they talk about a discrimination, it's being led by the Australian Christian Lobby. It's not being led by the Muslim Foundation or the Brotherhood of Sikhs. And, you know, when you start to look at it, if you're going to talk about, you know, insisting in some sort of rights of all religion to practice exactly as they like, then you start to, you know, I mean, the Sikhs in their religion of belief can carry daggers in public.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of their religion. And so I'm saying, you know, the right to be able to, if you like, employ people in schools and what have you that are sharing a common faith. I don't have an issue with that as long as it doesn't go any further.
Okay. We actually do have to go, Warren, because otherwise...
Sorry?
No. But Fiona, our producer, will be in touch. We'll get you back because we want to have a longer chat about this.
Yeah, well, I'd love to do that because I've already told them.
Okay.
I didn't waste 19 years of my political life removing discriminations from elements within our community just to sit back and let these guys discriminate against them again. I will not do it. I will cross the floor. I've made it very public.
Great. Well, there's plenty of space
That's
on the
music
other.
To our
it's ears. Music to our ears. We'll get you back in a week or two, Warren. Let's have a longer chat about this.
I'd love to.
Thank you.
And congratulations on your new bloody...
Our new joint. It's fantastic.
Proud of you.
Thank you. Just so you know, we didn't get any federal government funding, though, mate. Not a zap.
You should have come and talked to me.
Well, yes.
What about your local members down there? Who's your local member?
Is Josh Burns, but the adjoining member is Tim Wilson.
Well, why did you talk to Tim about
it? Oh, we have. Look, it's a problem for an issue for another day, Warren. I'll leave it with you.
I'll be happy to stick it up his ribs.
Okay. Thank you.
See you later.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Tess, you all right there, Tess?
Yes, I am, but that was Warren Inch, the federal member for Leichhardt, Liberal member.
Who said on this religious freedoms legislation, he told them he'll cross the floor. And in terms of...
And he has not fought for 19 years of his career to fight for
equality
to see it collapse like that. Anyway, these take
and
a
the last
break.
Comment about sticking it in someone's ribs was good too.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.